And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice. Hello, and welcome to our program, Lifestyle Improvement. This is your host, Rebecca. Today, we have with us Dr. Lorna Bradley. Dr. Bradley is an ordained deacon at the United Methodist Church. She received her degrees in divinity from Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas. Her doctoral project examined how churches can provide holistic emotional and spiritual support as they welcome families or caregivers of children with special needs. As a fellow of the Hope and Healing Institute in Houston, she creates resources to help support families that have members with special needs. And for the past 10 years, she has led support groups in welcoming ministries specifically designed for parents. At the personal level, Dr. Bradley and her husband of 30 years have an adult son with Asperger's. This, I am sure, has given Dr. Bradley a unique perspective as she authored the book titled Special Needs Parenting, From Coping to Thriving. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Bradley. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us at Lifestyle Improvement. I had the pleasure to read your book. It is very compassionate, and in my opinion, a look at the subject of special needs in a way that has not been looked at before. It shows the many challenges that parents with kids that have special needs have to confront. But in addition, it also seems to give a fresh spiritual perspective on how to address those challenges, keeping the emotional and the spiritual side in mind. So what was the moment when you realized that you had to do something and write a book that expressed your feelings about this concept, about this whole subject of parenting special needs?
You know, interestingly, there was genuinely a moment of epiphany for me. I was in the process of working on my doctoral program at the time, and I finished the coursework. I had a project I planned to write. I had an advisor, and all that was set to go forward. Also in that time frame, I had somebody from my church come and ask me if I would lead she called it a Bible study. It really turned out to be a support group. She asked me if I could lead a 4-week Bible study for parents with special needs. And I looked for resources, and there just really wasn't anything. And so I wrote from my own experience and kind of took something off the shelf and adapted it based on experience of special needs parents. So I had those two experiences going along side by side and was invited to introduce somebody at a disability conference. And I was preparing my devotional. And in the midst of that, I was reading the scripture in the Gospel of Mark where parents are bringing their children to Jesus and the disciples are keeping them away. And Jesus saw that. And in the Gospel of Mark, it specifically said he was indignant. And I swear those words had never been in the Bible before. So, you know, I looked in the parallel expressions of that same verse, and it didn't say he was indignant. It's just in the Gospel of Mark. It says that Jesus was indignant. And I was thinking of the stories my parents had shared about the hurts that they'd had along the way as they were raising children with special needs and their experiences in that group that I led. And I suddenly realized that was what I was called to do. I had the theological background. I had the experience as a parent. And I was in the midst of a doctoral program, you know, ready to write my project. Mm-hmm. And so I contacted my advisor and I said, Dr. Heath, I know we've been planning for 2 years to do this other thing, but I would like to do something completely different. And here's what it is. And she was 100% supportive of it, felt I had really found an area of great need where the needs of the world and the church needed to connect better. Mm-hmm. And so she said, yep, let's do it. And we just went a whole other direction.
So you had the support that you needed to go forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And definitely the personal experience.
Yes, my son at that time was in high school, so this was several years back, and it just it really resonated. I could look back at my experiences, you know, when he was younger, and how challenging that was, and the places where I struggled. And it was interesting as I began leading support groups, regardless of the diagnosis, you could have in the same room folks with children with autism, with cerebral palsy, with Down syndrome. And maybe somebody with, you know, ADHD, OCD, all these various diagnoses, but the challenges, the emotional and spiritual challenges that the parents or caregivers experienced, there was just this universal tone and universal themes that they all shared. And so it was amazing how much they could connect, regardless that their situations at home were different.
And that is so true. That universal tone does really transcend any kind of philosophical differences. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've even had, I was at a faith and disability conference out in Virginia Beach, and it was an interfaith conference. And I've had some conversations with some folks from Muslim communities who are interested in having me, you know, share this concept about special needs parenting support with them as well. And, you know, of course, they say, you know, please read the book. It is written from a Christian perspective. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, the need is universal. Mm-hmm. And we definitely want to speak with you about it.
Well, that's really a great segue to the next question, because in one of your chapters, you deal with the subject of faith and special needs. What is your view on that?
I think that God is very much with us in the midst of any challenges that we face mm-hmm. in life. And I think at times, especially in Christian scripture, folks may interpret scripture in a way that is not helpful to families. And so one of my goals with this book and in the groups that I've led is to help families have a sound understanding of God's presence and love and care for them in the midst of special needs, so that when somebody says something that isn't especially helpful, they have their own understanding and they have a better perspective that they can bring. And then maybe even offer a chance to, you know, share that perspective and help the person who perhaps has said something not helpful to see it in a different way.
I really appreciated how you utilized a lot of scripture when you supported your presentation of this particular subject.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I think at times people will quote scripture inappropriately. And, you know, understanding the context is very important, so that you are seeing how God's presence throughout the Bible is showing his love for us, his care for us, his support for us. Christ's ministry throughout the New Testament, he is so often going to those who have disability. And the understanding, that's where his focus in ministry was. You know, he wasn't going to the rich and the wealthy and the powerful. And, you know, he was going to the people who society pushed to the margins. Those were his people. And those were the people that he walked with and cared for and healed in some cases.
So definitely a great example there.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Bradley, what was your inspiration to write this book specifically? You did tell me that you had your moment of an aha moment.
Right.
What else do you think inspired you to write it in the way that you did?
Well, researching the specific chapters, a lot of that came out of my doctoral research, looking at psychology and sociology and some of those types of needs, looking at it from a spiritual perspective. From a practical standpoint, you know, I've been the pastor in the church office, you know, very busy, much going on, and someone saying, you know, please lead this group for me. And I went to my Christian bookstore and looked for a resource, and there just wasn't anything. There are getting, so there's more resources available, but I wanted a book I could pull off the shelf that would say, how do I organize this group? How do I invite people to it? What information do they need? How do I sustain it, you know, as time goes on? That didn't exist. And so I wrote the book that I, as the busy pastor, needed. One of the things, and I understand a pastor's perspective on this, a story I hear over and over is a person with special needs in their family will go to their pastor and say, you know, I need some help. You know, I need a support group. I need some help for working with my child. And the pastor will say, that's a fabulous idea. You organize it. And I get that point of view. You know, there's so many areas of ministry where, you know, you can delegate and have someone else take on that area of leadership. But this is really an issue of pastoral care. Mm-hmm. So if somebody went to their pastor, say with a cancer diagnosis, the pastor wouldn't say, well, you go organize for yourself some folks to bring you meals. And, you know, here's some phone numbers you can call. I mean, they're not going to do it that way. They will immediately see, here's a need that I need to minister to. When it comes to special needs, a lot of times it's not that pastors or congregations don't care. They simply aren't equipped with the right tools, mm-hmm. and nor do they understand the journey. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wrote the book the way that I did. It's perfectly suitable for individual readers. You don't have to be part of a support group. Mm-hmm. But I think something special happens when you are part of a group. There's something about sharing your story and having that resonate with someone else who can say, yes, I've been there too. Mm-hmm. I understand how you feel. And I wanted to equip that opportunity for healing that happens when people come together in community. So the book is suitable for individual readers, but it also is suitable for somebody who wants to launch or sustain a support group in a faith setting.
This is your host, Rebecca. And now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuka Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuka practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
Absolutely. And, you know, I really appreciate what you're saying, because not too long ago, we had another author here of a book called Second Forgetting. It was Dr. Mast. And he also has the same commentary that you just had about how churches need to be more educated on how to support caregivers. And in his case, he was talking about Alzheimer's.
Yes.
You know, Alzheimer's clients. But I don't think it's much different with special needs either. I think that what I see is potentially that long-term aspect to things. That,
absolutely.
You know, that when there's a long-term aspect to the ministering, it just becomes more challenging in how to figure out what to do to meet the need of this person or this family. Would you not agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think you'll see that sometimes, you know, say a family, you know, no indication that anything is atypical with a pregnancy, and, you know, the mother, you know, delivers her child and finds that unexpectedly she has a child who has Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that child also has a congenital heart issue. It's going to require surgery, and he or she's going to require surgery. And, you know, it seems that the congregation responds at the moment of medical crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll be the care for, oh, you know, surgery. We understand that. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we'll help with meals and prayer. We'll be with you while the surgery. But right. What they don't realize is that for the family, the medical crisis may end. It mm-hmm. may come and go. You mm-hmm. know, you have some of these children with special needs. It's ongoing medical issues that are very serious. Mm-hmm. But there's other stresses just related to the child's differences that just continue. And I think that understanding how that stress continues, that it's not just for a limited period of time, is something that I think sometimes gets misunderstood mm-hmm. in congregations. And I think especially with children, when they're infants and there's not really developmental disconnect as of yet. You know, the children still blend when they're younger, but when they get older, elementary into junior high, into high school, sometimes those developmental disconnects makes it hard for them to relate with peers of their own age, hard for them to understand the material that's being shared. And that's where that disconnect, I think, again, it gets back to just helping congregations be aware of the need. Right. And supplying them with the tools that they need to be responsive to the families so that everybody feels welcomed.
Exactly. And even when they gather in the house of worship, to actually provide support to the family so that they can go ahead and maybe the parents can participate in an adult activity while the kids are doing something with other children, having the church staff that is actually educated or prepared to be able to address that need.
Absolutely. If there's not a place for the child, there's not a place for the family.
Exactly.
And families, I love for everybody to be able to be present in worship. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it modeled wonderfully well that, you know, sometimes children with differences, they're a little noisy in worship. Mm-hmm. They make noises at unexpected times. And there's so many simple things a pastor can do to put everybody at ease. And I was in worship, you know, one time witnessed this myself. There was a young adult who had cerebral palsy and pretty much nonverbal combined to a wheelchair. And he'd had a medication change recently and was getting rather vocal. Mm-hmm. And this congregation, they had a buddy who was partnered with him. So the parents could be fully attentive in worship. Mm-hmm. There was somebody else to be there with him. And he just started making some noises and, you know, heads start to turn because you can't help but you hear a noise, you turn and respond to it. And the pastor says, I'll make up a different name than his own. We'll call him Tim. Okay. And the pastor says, you know what, Tim, I've always found this scripture kind of frustrating myself. I don't blame you for feeling that way at all. You know, and everybody kind of, you know, it put everybody at ease that it was okay. And, you know, next time he made a noise, nobody turned around and looked.
That's great.
And, you know, of course, the parents were like, you know, it's fine. Go ahead and take him out. But it wasn't as though the pastor kicked him out.
Right.
Let's compare that to another experience, a couple that I just was interviewing for another book that I'm working on now. Mm-hmm. They had visited a very large church and similar situation, a son, he was impacted by encephalitis when he was younger and nonverbal, but he does communicate and he has a very infectious laugh. And there was something about the drawl of the pastor when he started to speak that this young man found very humorous. And so he starts laughing and they're sitting on the very back row. I mean, you know, that's what families with special needs do. They don't go sit in the middle, you know, they sit in the back because they feel intimidated. And, sure enough, the, you know, ushers, he says, these men in suits came and started tapping us on the shoulder. And we, you know, so we left. So they said, well, we went out in the lobby and we thought we could just at least listen because they had speakers out there. And they said, you know, a couple minutes later, one of these gentlemen sticks his head back out and goes, we can still hear you inside.
Oh, my.
And she said, we just had to leave. So, you know, where would you feel welcome?
Right. That is... That is so well put in such a poignant, significantly descriptive situation that so many parents with kids with special needs face all the time in all kinds of environments, not just in the house of worship. And with that same thing in mind right now, you also spoke in your book about something very significant that has to do with this difficult or challenging situation the parents are faced with, which is chronic grief.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Chronic grief is a sense of grief that just continues to recycle itself and catch you almost unawares at times. When folks think of a grieving for something, oftentimes they expect to go through those classic stages of, you know, denial and anger and depression and, you know, eventually get to a place of acceptance and move on as best you can. There's some things about grief that just never truly leave us. But with the case of a child in front of you who's, you know, present and there with you, sometimes parents have a hard time, first of all, even identifying what they feel is grief. And if you can't name what you're feeling, it's hard to process it and work through it. Mm-hmm. But also that feeling of grief often resurfaces when there are moments of developmental disconnect that catch us by surprise. They might happen on, you know, what should be the first day of kindergarten. And, you know, maybe your child isn't going with the you know, child next door who it's their first day, but, you know, your child is going to a different school or, you know, times of expected first steps that don't happen, words that don't come. It causes that sense of grief to recycle. And I actually recently experienced it myself. I wrote about it. Yeah, I have a weekly blog that I do to offer support for parents. And you know, I had a sense of that myself recently where somebody commented about my son, just said that I had done a good job with him. And it just caught me out of the blue because I realized this person had noted his behaviors, evaluated, you know, felt like something was different. And I know they were being kind. Right. They didn't mean anything rude or bad. You know, it was not a bad thing that this person said, you've done a good job. My husband and I have done a good job. We have done a lot to equip our son to be successful in this world and to cope well. But it just kind of slapped me in the face at the moment. because it was so unexpected. I just thought we were having a fun time on a bike path picking berries. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it just caught me out in left field, I guess.
Right. It brings that difference to the present moment. And it just kind of changes your whole perspective to that.
Absolutely.
Instead of, you know, maybe the moment that you were enjoying already. And going back to that situation of your friend in church, because it could be as simple as probably a situation like what she just went through in that moment. And,
right.
you know, having to confront in that particular second that she wasn't able to sit and enjoy a service in church because, again, she and her family were different, correct?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I'll sometimes hear from folks that they'll say, well, you know, small churches, they just don't have the resources to be welcoming. You know, you can expect, you know, in the bigger churches because they have the, you know, budget. Mm-hmm. This was a big church where she had this experience, and they were determined they wanted to find a place that was welcoming. And they went to, there was a small startup church in their area that would have this community movie night in the park. And so they went to that, and the pastor was there, and he was, you know, visiting all the people that came and invited them to come to worship. It was meeting in some elementary school, and they thought, okay, we'll try. Mm-hmm. And they went, and sure enough, they had a similar experience with their son, and that he started getting, you know, a little noisy and agitated because it was hard for him to sit still. And completely different experience. You know, they had, you know, one of the greeters, you know, said, you know, is he doing okay? Is everything all right? And they said, oh, you know, he's just bored and he'd prefer to be outside. And they said, well, why don't you let us take him and you stay in worship? And said, we'll take him to, you know, where do you want us to go? What would he like? And so she just did some quick care advice, and they took him on his wheelchair outside and just kind of took him around the school grounds where he could see things that were interesting. And they got to enjoy being in worship. That became their church. And over time, their son, he just got so used to being there. He liked being there. He would sit quietly through the service because he liked being there once he got used to it. But it didn't take a special program. It just took a person who recognized this family needed some help in that moment and said, what can I do? What do you need? I mean, That's all it took.
And it just seems like what it really specifically took was someone to be willing to give the time and to have enough compassion to be willing to wait.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the biggest things that sometimes it's hard to remember when everybody has an agenda, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And families with special needs, the clock just operates at a different pace. And we just live in this culture where everything is, you know, fast, fast, busy, busy. And folks need to be willing to step out of that almost chaos of the pace of the typical American household and slow down and be at a different rhythm for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that different rhythm. It's just a different rhythm. And when you can match in with that family that's at that rhythm and be with them in that place and have that be okay, it's a whole different experience. And that's what happened with my friend at that church. Like you said, it was just recognizing the need and the space and willing to give them the time and the attention that they needed to feel welcomed.
Right. I love that. I love how you put that. To figure out what the rhythm of the family is. And when you find that rhythm, then you can actually be with them because you're matching their needs. That's beautifully said. Thank you, Dr. Bradley. Yeah. So you also spoke about the concept of guilt, chronic grief being a big thing, and then the guilt the parents of kids with special needs deal with on a very, very real basis.
Yes. Guilt can come in so many different ways. And birth mothers often experience guilt, feeling, you know, there was something that they did during the pregnancy that may have caused their child to have differences. Fathers, you know, same thing. They may have concerns about genetics. They may have concerns about how they provide for their family. And then just the day-to-day rhythm of the family. Oftentimes, there's so many therapies that are needed. And, you know, there could be guilt over whether or not you can afford those therapies. There can be guilt over whether you have the time to do all the exercises that the therapist wants you to do and how many times a day and so forth. There's this constant need of trying to be compliant. And then there's just, you know, what I call proud moments in parenting where you just lose your patience. You know, you realize it'd be so much easier to, you know, just do it this way, and we can't do it this way. We have to do it this other way, and this other way is harder.
Exactly.
And it's not so much for parents that they're frustrated, you know, with their child in that moment, but it sometimes it's this bigger picture they're seeing. Mm-hmm. I want my child to be able to do certain things. And if they can't do this first thing, that's the first step in the process, how are they going to get to, you know, these other things? And anyway, with those moments when parents lose patience, you know, again, that can create enormous guilt. And that guilt can come out in really dysfunctional ways mm-hmm. if they don't recognize it for what it is and look for ways to address it, to find forgiveness. Self-forgiveness is really, really important. And then even understanding if their guilt is even appropriate or reasonable for themselves. So, you know, sometimes parents carry enormous guilt for something that they have absolutely no control over at all and shouldn't feel guilty for.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you for joining us today on Lifestyle Improvement for part one of our interview with Dr. Lorna Bradley. Dr. Bradley is an ordained deacon at the United Methodist Church. She received her degrees in divinity from Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas. Her doctoral project examined how churches can provide holistic emotional and spiritual support as they welcome families or caregivers of children with special needs. She is also a fellow of the Hope and Healing Institute, where she creates resources to help support families that have members with special needs. If you would like to advertise with us, please give us a call at 877-957-7387, extension 101. That again is 877-957-7387, extension 101. Or send us an email to producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. That again is producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. Thank you for joining us this week on Lifestyle Improvement, and don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 for part two of our interview with Dr. Lorna Bradley.